This is Tom Rowe. You're listening to Turn on the News on Free 103.9. You can go to newsroom.free103.9.org for more information about anything you hear here. Tonight, we're going to talk to radio artist Annie Gosfield about her radio show that'll be on Free 103.9 and WGXC Saturday at 11:30 a.m. We'll go to Free Press for Media Minutes, and we've got news headlines, and we'll try to go on a caravan if we have time. Listening to Turn on the News, you can go to newsroom.free103.9.org for more information about anything you hear here, including links to international sources of radio art, radio news, and more at newsroom.free103.9.org. The scanner in the background with a tableau from time lapse. Megan Gus in Ars Technica reports that RIAA Chairman Kerry Sherman said his association and a number of ISPs, including AT&T, Cablevision, Comcast, Time Warner Cable, and Verizon, will, quote, begin policing traffic to crack down on piracy starting this summer, unquote. According to CNET, Sherman explained that, quote, each ISP has to develop their infrastructure for automating the system, unquote. He gave July 12th as the, quote, start date for the traffic monitoring. You can read that full story in Ars Technica. National Alliance for Media Arts and Culture, NAMAC, holds a blog salon on media policy and its importance to arts organizations all this week, and it ends Friday, March 16th. Panelists so far include Beth McConnell from Media and Democracy Coalition, Joseph S. Miller from the Media and Technology Institute and the Joint Center for Political and Economic Studies, Betty Yu from the Center for Media Justice, former FCC Commissioner Michael Copps, now at the Benton Foundation, and Ann Katz from Arts Wisconsin. You can follow the blog at the link at newsroom.free103.9.org. John Anderson at DIYmedia.net has an interesting update on high-definition radio. He's uncovered a memo, or a Cumulus Media's yearly filing with the Securities and Exchange Commission.
Okay, I'm sorry. I was just... No, I just love you, and I want to help you sort it out.
And he's found that it seems like it's the first time that a backer of HD Radio has been so forthright in a financial document about the tenuous nature of radio's digital transition. We'll quote the memo. It says, on March 5th, 2009, we entered into an amendment to our agreement to reduce the number of planned conversions, extend the build-out schedule, and increase the license fees to be paid for each converted station. At this juncture, we cannot predict how successful our implementation of HD radio technology within our platform will be, or how that implementation will affect our competitive position.
There's all sorts of things to think about the pricksy.
You can go to DIYmedia.net for more information about this report. And you can go to newsroom.free103.9.org for all kinds of other information about radio news, radio art, media news, and more. Now let's go to Free Press and their Media Minutes for March 16th, 2012. On Turn on the News. ¶¶
Welcome to Media Minutes, a weekly review of news related to the intersection of media and democracy. I'm Stevie Converse.
And I'm Candace Clement.
And I'm Libby Reinisch.
This week is Sunshine Week. Now in its eighth year, Sunshine Week is a time to stand up for the importance of open government and freedom of information. To mark the occasion, Free Press volunteers all over the country paid a visit to their local broadcast stations to inspect their public files. Buried in these largely unknown treasure troves is critical information about how our media outlets serve our communities, as well as information about who is paying for political advertisements in this era of unlimited campaign spending. Steve Walker, the former state archivist of Idaho, signed up to visit KTVB in Boise. He was surprised to learn where the money for political ads aired in Idaho is coming from.
It really kind of shocked me to see a lot of the things coming from out-of-state interests. It isn't in-state money funding a lot of things. It's out-of-state money.
Even a longtime open government advocate like Walker was unaware that broadcast stations maintained public files. He now feels motivated to visit other local stations.
I think that I will be more assertive in investigating our various television stations and seeing where the message is coming from. Is it coming from right here, or is it coming from somewhere else?
Walker relies on broadcast stations and newspapers for news and information.
I'm pretty old-fashioned in that we don't have cable. I just have the old airwaves. Their coverage on local traffic accidents or a fire or something like that is fairly good, but political coverage is pretty much what they've been handed out in press releases. It's not a whole lot of investigative reporting.
When asked why he decided to participate in Free Press's Sunshine Week action, Walker said he's simply passionate about the cause.
I've just been a long supporter for openness in government and transparency in government. I think that that's the essence of democracy. I think there is an awful tendency more and more for secrecy and doing things behind closed doors than out into the bright light of the public.
To learn more about Sunshine Week, visit sunshineweek.org. To learn more about visiting your local station, visit savethenews.org. In a nod to Sunshine Week, the Senate Judiciary Committee held a hearing to discuss new exemptions to the Freedom of Information Act. Congress is considering sealing off more material by using the proposed Cybersecurity Act to expand the definition of critical infrastructure information. Senator Patrick Leahy, who serves as committee chairman, called the hearing to examine how to balance the need to protect sensitive government information and to honor the public's right to know about threats to their health and safety.
Legislation on FOIA should not be a partisan issue, because I don't care whether you have a Democratic or Republican administration, there's always going to be some who are going to want to say, why do we have to release this information? Well, my response would be because you represent all Americans, and we have a right to it.
Retired Marine Master Sergeant Jerry Ensminger spoke to the committee. He lost his 9-year-old daughter to leukemia in 1985. He attributes her death to the contaminated drinking water at Camp Lejeune in North Carolina, where Ensminger was based. It wasn't until 1997 that he learned that the water was tainted. In his own investigation, he came up against a concerted effort to hide the truth.
Throughout the history of this situation and to this very day, representatives of the Department of the Navy and Marine Corps have knowingly provided investigating or studying agencies with incorrect data. They have omitted data. They have obfuscated facts and told many half-truths and total lies.
Ensminger says that the U.S. Navy and Marine Corps are attempting to suppress public knowledge regarding Camp Lejeune studies by redefining key details as critical infrastructure information.
Mr. Chairman, the last thing we need is more secrecy disguised as a concern for security of critical infrastructure.
Panelist Kenneth Bunting, executive director of National Freedom of Information Coalition at the Missouri School of Journalism, agreed with Ensminger.
We believe any new cybersecurity or critical infrastructure exemptions should contain at a minimum a tight definition of the information to be exempted, a sunset for the law and for the protection attached to the information, and a public interest balancing test that allows legitimately protected information to remain protected, but not information being withheld primarily to protect the government from embarrassment.
You've been listening to Media Minutes, a production of Free Press, a national nonpartisan organization working to reform the media. Freepress.net.
Welcome to the Radio Ragnarok, where we've got all news all live all the time. Your complete coverage of the apocalypse.
And that's all you can do. You can't be responsible for that beyond your power.
Every day we think of you. You're the one we cater to. 'Cause we want you to return. Your comfort is our concern.
If you've got batteries, then you've got Radio Ragnarok. Radio on the rag.
The latest attempt to resolve the deadlock
adds another layer of risk to us, especially the farther out you are from law and order.
Do not defy the Council Master, not again.
Episode 17 hours, 47 minutes, Coordinated Universal Time.
1 million powerful watts blasting out into your radio zone. That's right, bring you on the rag.
West of the Rockies, including Montana, Wyoming, Colorado, and New Mexico.
All electronic promises to pay are suspect.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the last game show on Earth.
Well, it will be costly. It may cause a global depression. It may cause your lights to go out. There may not be any food on the grocery store shelves. And the government may respond with a form of techno-fascism.
They're advancing right now. They're advancing on us. We're running. We're running.
At the drone, 17 hours, 47 minutes, Coordinated Universal Time.
What is the end?
It's not over until we say it's over.
And now, a word from our sponsors.
Good things last. Quality wears as quality should.
Nothing compares with the product that's good. Good things last.
Radio Ragnarok, because we rock until the clock stops.
The time now being midnight, Greenwich Mean Time.
Well, that's all.
That's Anna Fritz with Radio Ragnarok from Silence Descends. Up next, we talked with Annie Gosfield, who on Saturday is airing Reflections on Floating Messages, Conversations with Music with Annie Gosfield. It's using secret radio transmissions between British intelligence and resistance movements from World War II in her work. Let's listen to Annie tell it the story for herself. All right, this is Tom Rowe with Free 103.9 talking to Annie Gosfield. And Annie, you're in Berlin now?
I'm in Berlin.
And what are you working on there?
I got a fellowship with the American Academy in Berlin, which is just a great experience. And I have a concert coming up on Wednesday as part of Märzmusik at Berghain on March 21st. And I am ashamed to say, still finishing up a piece for cello and electronics.
And we're here to talk to you today about, I guess your piece is called Reflections on Floating Messages, Conversations and Music with Annie Gosfield. Is your program on the Radio Network this week, an international network of radio art stations that include Free 103.9. And you recorded this in November at Sound Art Radio in Dartington in England. Is that right?
In Dartington, England, in beautiful Devon.
So tell us about the piece.
The piece was a long time in the making. It was inspired by the radio transmissions of the Danish resistance and of other European resistance groups in World War II. And the idea was to combine my electronic group with a more traditional chamber ensemble. Now, the subject of these clandestine radio transmissions is it really works very well with music interpretation, because you can think in terms of numbers and codes and permutations, or you can just use beautiful radio sounds. So this was exciting for me because I got to use a lot of sampled radio sounds, as well as evoke the same ideas with the ensemble.
Are these radio recordings of the resistance, are they available on the internet, or is this research you had to do, or?
There are no. I could find no recordings that were original. There are snippets from the French Resistance, from the program that was transmitted on the BBC. But I thought a lot also in terms of Morse code and things that were just broadcast, not commercially, not something that would be recorded, but from one Resistance member to another Resistance member via Morse code or via shortwave radio. So some of it has to be kind of imaginative as well. I also did a lot of work just getting a period shortwave radio, and a lot of my favorite samples that I got from the radio were actually as it was malfunctioning and the tubes were no longer working. But I thought in its own way that would be very evocative of the time as well.
So you were really trying to get use some period equipment that evokes what the sound of transmission was at that time.
Yeah, I mean, when I was first thinking about this project and shortwave transmissions, I just got a little transistor radio just to kind of start getting my ears around it. But, you know, obviously this is a very different sound than an old tube radio. So I ordered a tube radio on eBay, and it was a little more as is than I expected. At the same time, it produced some very beautiful sounds.
And did your research, did you find, were there other ways that the resistance was communicating? You know, were there strange like cups and strings or other odd communication devices or methods?
Well, one thing that was fun about the Danish resistance in particular is they were really on top of it in terms of technology. And not to go too deep into the history here, but the SOE, you know, the English who were overseeing the resistance groups really wanted to keep a handle on the technology and try to keep it very consistent. But the people who eventually became Bang & Olufsen developed a much better radio to be used on site. I mean, there are also crazy weapons and all kinds of strange inventive things. And there were all types of communication. And, you know, a lot of the communications, probably most of the communications, is just junk and noise and stuff they put out there to keep German decoders busy. So they may not recognize the real message.
So it's kind of like the number stations, where you never know what the code is and what the noise is, I guess.
Yeah, it's totally, that comes out of the same tradition. And again, this is, for me, a really compelling idea to interpret musically, because you get something rising out of the noise. You know, you try to lock into that one message that isn't just chatter.
And so what are the kind of musical qualities that you're playing with?
Well, we were superimposing these two ensembles. There was my trio that was sampler, electric guitar, and Chris Cutler on drums and electronics. And this was more a source of noise and white noise and electronic sounds. And the acoustic ensemble, which is from Copenhagen, called the Atellis Ensemble, was more the source of more traditional electronic sounds, either sinfonietta. I mean, I'm sorry. The Atellis Ensemble from Copenhagen was more the source of acoustic sounds, being a more traditional sinfonietta.
Yeah, I was going to ask, how did they react to working with radio sounds in What was their reaction?
You know, they were real sinfonietta. They took their cues from the conductor. I don't even know if they heard the radio sounds. It's so funny because most of the project I do, everybody's so involved and they want to hear the sounds. This was like that step to a larger ensemble and how they basically look to a leader and we do our own thing.
Yes, and I guess one final question. I don't want to keep you too long. How did you first get involved with radio in your work, and why are you interested in radio in your work?
I think I first got involved by listening to this old tube radio my parents had and always trying to find the spaces between the stations, you know, the static. It's the same as watching TV when it wasn't tuned in, back when you could do that. And just listening to the white noise and the pink noise and the variations of sound, which I think was probably as big an influence on me as any composer or teacher. And then trying to bring this kind of aesthetic into my work is very natural. There's also a piece called Lost Signals and Drifting Satellites that's inspired by the transmissions that Sputnik, the satellite, made. And again, shortwave sounds and the idea of just a sky filled with satellite noise and people going out and listening to it very specifically.
All right. Is there anything else you'd like to tell listeners about the radio show that is going to be on 11:30 a.m. Saturday on Free 103.9?
Well, I would just say the musicians involved are myself as composer and sampler player, Chris Cutler on drums, Roger Clyer on electric guitar, plus the Atella Sinfonietta, and our fearless conductor was Pierre-André Vallade. And the entire project was overseen by Third Ear and Ed McKean in England, who really helped the project happen. And the recording part of it, the radio show that you're hearing, is also done in Dartington, England by, you'll help me with the name of the company?
It's Sound Art Radio.
Sound Art Radio.
And I think you worked with Lucinda Guy, probably?
Lucinda, yeah.
And it looks like Chris Booth and Ariane Delanos. I'm mispronouncing her name, I'm sure.
Yeah. I don't know if this is going to work as a sound bite, but we worked with Lucinda and Ariane.
Ah, Ariane. Okay, great. All right. Well, thank you so much, Annie, for joining us today from Berlin. And we'll be listening to your floating messages and fading frequencies at 11:30 a.m. on Saturday on Free 103.9. You've been listening to Turn on the News on Free 103.9. You go to newsroom.free103.9.org or free103.9.org. Tune in every night at midnight and Saturdays at 8 a.m. on Free 103.9.